The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
Hey friends, this is episode number 27 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
How are you ladies doing?
Doing okay.
So good.
Good, good. Just a bit of a fair warning. I've been watching a little bit of Intervention and Hoarders lately, so if I suddenly bust out into psychobabble, just feel free to, like, give me a nudge, because it's been kind of wearing off on me. So, like, if let's say I ask one of you about something, and I reply with, I feel like you're coming from a place of pain. Just go along with it. It's completely normal.
Okay.
I did this last week, too. I was coming off the tail end of a Voyager binge, Star Trek Voyager, and I started talking like 7 of 9. So I was at the office, and my boss gave me an assignment, and I was like, this is inefficient. And he's like, what? And I'm like, irrelevant. And I'm just like, why am I using these words? And like, state your intentions, and just all sorts of shows just leave an impact on me. So just a fair warning, I'm perfectly fine. Shoutouts this week. We have a brand new review on iTunes from Muscadine, and they said, The Girlfriend Bracket is the perfect blend of storytelling, advice, and information on magic and the gaming community in general. If you want to be entertained, informed, educated on how to be a better player, and maybe even a better person, this podcast is for you. Thank you so much for that. I also want to give a shout-out to a woman named Suzanne Heidemuller, who we talked about shortly after GP Lille. She was predicted to be the front runner for the captain of the Irish team at the World Cup, and it looks like she did in fact get that slot, so she Yay. Will be the captain of that team. So root for Team Ireland when the World Magic Cup takes place. Woman of excellence this week is a young lady named Mrs. Mulligan. Now, Hallie, you're the one who recommended her, and you said that she was a streamer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I happened upon Mrs. Mulligan's stream on Sunday night. I had been watching GP Oklahoma City coverage, and after that ended, I was just looking for something else to watch on Twitch, and I was like, oh, Mrs. Mulligan, I wonder who that is. And so I tuned into her stream. It seemed pretty popular, actually. I don't know, this was my first time watching her, so I'm not sure how many viewers she gets regularly, but she had about, you know, 80 to 100 viewers that night, which seemed pretty good for someone just starting out. And she was playing Modern Merfolk, and what impressed me the most about her was that she just had this incredibly positive attitude. She was playing in a bunch of two-person Modern queues, and, you know, whether she was winning or whether she was losing, she was just so positive and so willing to learn from her mistakes. So, good job, Mrs. Mulligan. She sounds like she's doing an awesome job. She said she is a member of her local Lady Planeswalker Society chapter in St. Louis, which is really awesome. And yeah, I really enjoy her work and just wanted to give her a little shout out for that.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. I can't help but wonder if there's a Mr. Mulligan.
I know she has a husband who was like helping her out with her stream a little bit, but I don't think Mulligan is their real name. But I don't know. I don't know what her real name is, but she seemed pretty cool.
Sure. Well, like they say, the family that mulligans together stays together.
Right.
I think that's fantastic. You know, I definitely have been wanting to be around more positivity myself lately, and that's really hard to find, especially because, you know, Twitch chat can be so unpredictable. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I remember when I watched Raphael Levy's stream, he had probably the most dignified stream I've ever seen in terms of, like, his chat, where his chat was just so respectful, and they didn't, you know, blow up the chat when he was trying to make crucial plays and things like that. And then I've also seen streams that just, you know, kind of spam you, and they kind of want to get a rise out of you, and they're not really offering anything constructive to the conversation. So if you can find that good chat, it's important that you cultivate that, and I would certainly want to be around that.
Yeah, her chat seems pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And did you say her Twitch address?
Yeah, her... Let me find it. Hold on one second.
Yeah, I want to add her now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd seen people, I think, retweeting her, and she didn't seem like she had a large Twitter following, but she may be bigger on Twitch, and she's just trying to, you know, promote herself more.
Yeah, she is Mrs. underscore Mulligan, twitch.tv/Mrs_Mulligan.
Cool. I'll certainly have to check her out then. Mm-hmm. Two major events happened this past weekend. The first one I want to talk about is GP Oklahoma City, because I feel like that one had some more newsworthy things happen. Mm-hmm. You know. So this was a modern GP. Top eight included Merfolk by Paul Rietzel. Hangerback Affinity. Hangerback Walker is officially a thing in modern now. Naya Byrne. Scapeshift. Elves. Amulet Bloom. Blue-Red Twin. And Lantern Control. Uh-huh. For those playing the home game, Lantern Control is a prison-style deck that is meant to really, really control the game, primarily with artifacts. So the engine revolves around a card called Lantern of Insight that allows you to see the top card of your opponent's deck, and I believe your own deck as well. Uh-huh. And then you use cards like Ghoul Caller's Bell and Codex Shredder to control what your opponent draws. So anyway, when you have more than one of those artifacts out at a time, you really can sort of steer the game in the direction that you want it to. So for people who like Serum Visions and you decide to scry two and keep the top two, he can simply mill those top two if he doesn't like what he sees. So he's able to make a lock on the game and then either win by milling you out or by using Academy Ruins and something like Pyrite Spellbomb to win the game. And it just tore through the day. I think he was undefeated after day one. Mm-hmm. Win in the day two. I actually watched the finals. Did you guys happen to see it in action at all?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it was nuts. What do you guys think about this? I mean, it seems like Lantern Control is real. I mean, do you think that we're going to see more of this? Like, what do you think?
So Lantern Control's big tournament finishes have only come from this one guy, Zach Elsick, who I believe is the person who invented the deck. Mm-hmm. And at least, like, I know, Katie, you said there's someone in your community who's been playing it. Mm-hmm. There are a couple other people who have sort of latched on, but this is really, like, his deck. And so before he won this event, people just sort of dismissed it as, like, oh, it's just this one guy with this one deck, and it has all these pieces, maybe it's flimsy, whatever. But I think now that it's actually won a Grand Prix, it might get some more attention, and as more people start playing it and start innovating with it, I think it could become a real thing.
Yeah, I talked to the guy who played it, or plays it still, after the last time it did well, and I was like, give it to me straight, Murph. Is this deck good? And he said that it's one of the most challenging decks he's ever played. Like, on paper, it doesn't really seem like it, like, kind of mill him. But he was like, you have to have a really good grasp of everything going on in Modern. You have to know what you want to mill, when you want to mill it, and know what every other deck is doing, because then you can use cards like Surgical Extraction that once you mill a key piece of a different deck, you can take it so that you're not worried about them drawing another piece if you're tapped out on your mill artifacts or whatever. And he said that it's really mentally taxing, especially for like a long day of Magic. I think he said that if we were still doing like the big TQs, like the real ones, that were, you know, 7-8 rounds, or if he was going to a Grand Prix, he would need a lot more stamina than he has right now to play it all day, because he's like, it's like playing a control deck. It's super mentally taxing, and you have to know what's going on at all times. You can't just really, you never get to just do your own thing and win sometimes.
Yeah, that was one of the things that the commentators were praising him for, it was Zach Elsick, was that he was playing at a very brisk pace, and he was also very careful not to miss his triggers, and obviously there are a lot of things going on where it would be very easy for you to, you know, miss revealing a card, miss milling somebody. It seems like it'd be very easy to make a misplay. Mm-hmm. Chris, what do you think about this? You've dabbled with control decks, and you, I think you've expressed interest in this in the past.
Yes.
Okay.
It seems like there's a lot of things to keep track of, and that would maybe be very daunting for me, because I get sometimes, like, under pressure while I'm playing, and I feel like I'd be like, oh, crap, I missed this trigger. Oh, shit, I forgot to do this. And I would hate to end up in that position. If I could actually practice it pretty regularly, like, maybe that could be something that that I would want to play. It's playing Codex Shredder, which is one of my favorite cards, so I'm totally fine with that. But Ensnaring Bridge is a really expensive card, and I can't say that I have any. So,
Are they really?
Yeah. I think they're like over $20.
That's expensive. Really?
That's expensive to get four. Yeah, so
I wanna look this up now. Yeah, you're right. TCG Player has them at $18 a piece, but that there's not very many vendors that are selling them for that low. It starts at $18 and goes up. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because Nick has like two, and then I think he's borrowing two from a friend because he had it in his 8-rack deck. So it wouldn't be hard to get some of the cards, but the Incinerating Bridges would probably be more expensive. But I could probably whip it up if I wanted to, maybe play test it. I'll have to think about it.
Yeah, I'm a little interested to see where the format goes going forward, because Affinity has certainly been picking up a lot of steam lately, and combined with this, it's very easy to hate Affinity out of a format. Like, when people don't want to lose to Affinity, they make sure not to lose to it. And I think that this deck, you know, coming up, combined with Affinity, people are really going to be making sure that they have their Shatterstorms and their Fracturing Gusts and their Ancient Grudges, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes going forward.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So,
I was really happy to see that every deck in the top eight was different.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah. Yeah, people pointed to that and said that it was a sign that the format was healthy, because for a while there was a lot of talk about the format being diverse but yet stale at the same time. Would you say that we're finally in a good place where the format's better?
I think this looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, so much of the matches that I saw just sort of came down to play skill. Like, we saw a lot of really accomplished players doing well at this event with really strong decks. So I think it's pretty much anyone's game now.
Mm-hmm. With Battle for Zendikar on the horizon, there's always talk of bannings and restricted lists and things like that. Do you foresee any bannings coming to Modern, or do you think that we're pretty okay?
I think we're okay for now. I mean, I've heard, like, murmurings about Coco, but I don't think Coco is especially oppressive right now.
Really?
Yeah, I mean the Elf deck is very good, don't get me wrong. The Coco Elves deck is pretty strong, but I think the format is diverse enough that there are enough answers to it, and there's enough balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think maybe, there's a possibility of something being unbanned. I haven't thought about it far enough to know what it is, but I don't think we'll see anything banned.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I still feel like, you know, and I know certain people complained about this as well, I still feel like, you know, Amulet and Griselbrand are still, I feel like they're consistent enough where they still violate, you know, those rules of Modern. And so I would not be, and again, it's not a power level thing. It's not that I'm scared of those decks personally, but, you know, I just keep thinking of sort of the rules of Modern, and there are still enough people saying that those decks are going off on turn two and whatnot, that it just sort of kills it for them. So I think those might be blips on the radar, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Other standout decks, Naya Blitz, featuring old favorites like Gore Clan Rampager, Flint Hoof Boar, and Burning Tree Emissary.
That sounds like the first Modern deck I built.
Oh, back to Standard 1 year ago.
Right? Right? Where's Bonfire of the Damned? Like, where do we draw the line here?
Right.
Brad Nelson has been playing Jund lately, and I am completely here for it. Brad has picked up the mantle of being the Jund guy, and he's been doing a really good job with the deck, and he makes me want to pick it up again, so a big shout-out to Brad. The other interesting deck that I saw was played by a young man named Steve Rubin.
Oh, yeah, I love this deck.
So for those who don't know, this is being called Return to the Ranks. Mm-hmm. And this is a throwback to what used to be called the Aristocrats in Standard back when Innistrad was legal. And the main thrust of this deck appears to be, let me find it here. I just had it. Where did it go? Steve Rubin, where did your deck go? Affinity Knight. I had the list. Where did it go? Here we go. Okay. So the theory behind this deck is you play cards like Doom Traveler. You play cards like Tuukka Tung Thalid. You know, little I did say that, Tukatung Thalid. You heard right, people. So you basically play little bitty creatures that happen to leave a creature behind when they die. So Tukatung Thalid makes a 1-1 sapperling. Doom Traveler makes a 1-1 spirit token. And then you pair it with cards like Blood Artist, where when something dies, the opponent loses a life and you gain a life. And then you play it with things like Cartel Aristocrat, which you can sacrifice to the aristocrat. You can sacrifice it to something like Teza Orzhov Scion. And you have this engine where you're sacrificing little things to make more little things, and then while you sacrifice, things happen, and it just turns into this really hard-to-beat engine. They've been throwing in Abzan Ascendancy to really help out with that. Viscera Seer, which is always a fun win condition for people who like to sack things. And then you play a card like Return to the Ranks, which returns so many creature cards with converted mana cost 2 or less from the graveyard to the battlefield, and you basically do it all over again. Hallie, you said that you were here for this deck?
I did. I was watching Steve play on day one, and this deck looked amazing. I always regretted not playing the Aristocrats when it was in Standard, because yeah. I just love that style of play. When I saw that he had incorporated Abzan Ascendancy, I thought that was really cool, too. Also, the one-ofs in this deck are wonderful. He has a one-of Dryad Arbor, a one-of Cartel Aristocrat, and a one-of Teza Orzhov Scion, personal favorite of mine. So yeah, I'm totally here for this.
Yeah, the deck also looks pretty affordable. I think really the only expensive cards here, I mean, you 3 Marsh Flats, 4 Verdant Catacombs, the Windswept Heaths are a little bit more affordable because they're from Khan's block. Voice of Resurgence is kind of pricey. But I think compared to other modern decks, this one's not so bad.
Yeah, if you draft a Tukatung Thalid in Modern Masters 2, hold on to them.
Hashtag MTG Finance. They're going to spike. Yeah, I remember watching Tom Martell play this at that Pro Tour, and I was with you, Hallie. I really wanted to play this, but I had invested so heavily into Jund, and the format was about to rotate, where I really didn't want to spend all that money for the deck that was only going to last about 2 months. But for those of us who want to live that dream, I would play this. This looks like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see it. And he came in 14th place, which is not bad at all. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to seeing if that deck has legs too. Overall, I couldn't help but think about that listener whose question we answered last week, who was like, do I have to give up my Rogue Brews if I want to do well? No, sir, you do not. Like, you can play with Tukatung Thalid and Lantern of Insight, and you gonna be all right. And
yeah,
I was very happy to see that.
Yeah, Steve Rubin's deck was one of my 2 favorites that I saw on coverage this weekend. The other being Patrick Chapin's Teamer Prowess deck.
Yeah.
That looked pretty sweet, too.
So I didn't really get to see that. So what is it, basically? It's Tarmogoyf and then Abbot of the Abbot.
Yeah, Abbot of Carol Keep, yeah.
Okay. And it works?
Yeah, he had a lot of cantrips. He had lightning bolts. He had... let's see. He had cards that made Tarmogoyf really good, so he had, like, Rancor and Seal of Fire just to sort of get those enchantments to make his Tarmogoyf bigger.
Ooh.
But yeah, it was spicy. It was really cool. Chapin played it like a master, of course. And it was really entertaining to watch.
Nice, nice. Yeah, again, all these Rogue Brews doing well, I think that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of the map, we had SCG Worcester. Wushta, and this was Standard. Top 8 included 2 Esper Dragons. Esper Dragons won the whole thing. 1 Jeskai Aggro, 3 Abzan Aggro, 1 Mono White Devotion, and 1 Blue White Control. Were you surprised to see Esper Dragons come roaring back?
It's only a matter of time before the control deck comes out on top.
But can it stay there is the question.
No.
No.
I don't know. Standard feels very blah to me right now. Mm-hmm. I actually have time to play FNM this week, and it's Standard, and I was like, I don't even know if I want to build a deck. Maybe I'll just stay home. But I do like the mono white deck. Mm-hmm. It looks like just a really fun deck to play before rotation. I really love Brimaz. He has a special place in my heart. But this deck, I don't know. I just don't play decks like this very often, but I think I could get behind this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of Abzan Aggro at Worcester. Abzan Aggro also stands to lose the least. I mean, they lose Fleecemane Lion, but they keep everything else. Rakshasa Death Dealer, Anafenza, they still have Abzan Charm, they have Hangerback Walker. This deck could probably survive rotation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm a little concerned too, because all of the pros are starting to do their predictions for post, you know, rotation standard, and every deck has four hanger back walker. I mean, it was like, you know, Sultai, Sidisi, Frostwhip, Delve, and I'm like, oh, this sounds like four hanger back walker. What? It's just, I'm not sure that I want to play in a standard where every deck includes four hanger back walker. I'm just not sure that's my idea of a good time.
True to
that. Yeah, my testing partner, Simon, has fallen back on red-white control, or red-white aggro for standard right now, because mm-hmm. he's convinced that chaining to the rocks hanger back walkers is, like, the best thing you can be doing in standard. And I'm kind of sad about what's going to happen in a world where we don't have things like that to deal with hanger back.
Well, you know, being a former Constellation girl, we have wonderful things like Silk Wrap and Suppression Field.
Oh, goody.
Oh, goody.
Hey, now, I won a game day with those cards, okay?
She did.
Yeah, game day champion Aaron Campbell used those cards. Yeah, write that down. So what impact would you like to see, then? Like, when you look at the Battle for Zendikar spoilers, you know, where would you like to see things go?
Oh, man. I was just sort of looking through the spoilers today because I was trying to think of, you know, we always try to think about, like, sleeper cards or cards that aren't good in this standard that we would like to see be good in future standard. Mm-hmm. I would really like to see Torrent Elemental have its day in the sun.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if it's going to, but that whole thing about, you know, being able to cast it from exile and the Eldrazi exiling things has kind of got the gears turning in my head. So I don't know if it could actually work, but that's something that I'm a little hopeful about.
Yeah.
I just want to see something completely new.
Yes.
Like, I'm not really... I hope Abzan Aggro doesn't stick around, personally. Like, not that I don't... You know, not that I dislike playing against the deck or playing with the deck, but it just feels like it's been around for too long and I'm like ready for, you know, a new type of cookie. This mm-hmm. cookie is worn out.
Yeah, I would just like to see some other color combinations. You know, I think Khans did what it needed to do in terms of highlighting Mardu and Sultai and everything like that, but I certainly don't think Temur's gotten a lot of love. Like, I would love to see Temur break out. I would love to see, you know, Sultai become a little popular, if not for the whip factor. I'd love to see Jund become a thing again. I'm just anxious for some new color combinations, you know, maybe mm-hmm. going back to two colors, seeing maybe if monocolor is possible. I'm just tired of seeing Abzan everything, where, you know, it's just Abzan control, Abzan aggro. It's just a really dominant wedge right now, and hell, I wouldn't even mind if Mardu came back. I just would like to see something other than, you know, the same cards over and over again.
Yeah,
great.
So
we might not see any colors now.
Do you think that there's enough there to really go colorless, like just issue color altogether?
I think no. But I mean, I feel like you kind of have to have some kind of ramp if you're going to be playing the big bad boys we got here. But I do think that your deck could be mostly colorless if you count Devoid as colorless. I don't know. It depends on if you're defining your deck by the color of the cards you're technically casting or by the lands you're tapping.
Right. Well, one thing that could get in the way of ramp strategies, I know we swore we weren't going to talk about spoilers, but I have to rub this in a little bit. They did spoil a lovely little card called Crumble to Dust.
Yes.
Chris, did you see that card?
I did. I wanted to die. It was just so awful. I was like, no. I finally have something I care about, and they just want to take it away from me. But then I was like, I play counters. I'm okay. They don't play counters. Screw you, Red Green Tron.
See? Aaron, there you go.
Aaron, tell us what the card does. I don't think I saw it.
Oh, it's good. Hold on to your butts. Okay. Crumble to Dust, three colorless and a red. It's basically a functional reprint of Sowing Salt, which is where you can exile target non-basic land, search its controller's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with the same name as that land and exile them, and then that player shuffles their library. So you name something like Urza's Tower. And then you get rid of all their Urza's Towers, and then good luck assembling Tron, girl.
And then you Snapcaster Flash it back, and then you do it to Urza's Power Plant, mm-hmm. and then you do it again with a different copy, and you just take all their damn lands, and then you're like, Nope. And then hopefully you're not dead.
So hopefully you're not dead.
If the controller doesn't kill you, the deck will, but Chris just reaches over and strangles him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what made this card so appealing is Sowing Salt is 2/2 red, which is a little more prohibitive of mana cost, so Crumble to Dust is much more splashable. I know especially as a Jund player or a black-green player, you know, Crumble, Fulminator Mage sometimes doesn't get the job done. I know I've certainly had Tron beat me after a Smallpox, after a Fulminator, and this is just a little bit more of a permanent solution. You could maybe bring this in against Scapeshift as well to get rid of a Valakut on the board. You know, there's just so many uses for this, and people were really excited. I couldn't help but think about Nicki Minaj when I saw this card, when she confronted Miley Cyrus. Like, what's good, Tron? Like, I was very, very excited to see this. So, no offense, of course, but... So, moving on. So, speaking of Battle for Zendikar, John Dale Beattie from Star City Games wrote an article the other day about Nissa, and specifically was talking about how Nissa seems to have experienced a bit of a retcon, and how when she first came out, she was portrayed as being kind of xenophobic and thinking that elves were the better race or the better species on Zendikar. She was intentionally designed to be physically unusual, to make her look different from other elves and kind of off-putting, and now she's being portrayed as kind of this granola, peace with everybody, very compassionate, very fierce determination. And he was kind of wondering if this was a good move. Do you agree with the retcon? Like, do you like her the way she is now, or would you have preferred she be a little off-putting?
I'm not down with it.
No.
And mostly because I like seeing characters that are able to redeem themselves. You know, I like complex characters. This kind of just ignores, like, all of that. And I would rather have a character that was very, very flawed, you know, used to be a certain way, but then they learn something. They're able to, you know, become bigger than they were before. They are able to see from a different viewpoint. And I just don't know if the right answer is just to sweep everything that you don't like or that you are unhappy that, you know, you once supported, like, under the rug. Because obviously they were okay with this as a story initially. But now all of a sudden it's like, just kidding, guys, this is the story now. I just think that's kind of a bad move, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with Chris insofar as, like, I also like complex characters. I like characters that are kind of morally ambiguous. I mean, I understand the inclination to have a very... a character represent your game who has a sort of moral high ground. Mm-hmm. But... I feel like something can be learned from, you know, having reformed racist Nissa, you know? Like, have her, you know, be this xenophobic character, but maybe present her in the context of a story where, like, maybe she learns something, maybe she overcomes that. I feel like something like that could actually be very useful for the community. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Katie, how do you feel about Nissa? Do you like her the way she was, or how she is now?
So I didn't know anything about who she was or any of that. So this was kind of interesting to read. I like my villains, but I also like my anti-heroes. And I kind of wish they had put her more in that category rather than just, like, it feels like she's very tame mm-hmm. now. And she's, I mean, I always pictured her as a very, like, you know, wild being. And so... I guess I agree with both Hallie and Chris in that I wish she... I think it's good that they changed, like, racial aspects about her background, but I think that they should have still kept her, like, badass in her own way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Wizards was asked about this at one of their panels at PAX, and they said that they wanted her values to reflect the way that they as a company are evolving and to set themselves up for the best success mm-hmm. with this character. And I agree with that, but I think it would have been better if the change was done in the story. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there were a lot of storytelling opportunities there to have her show us that change and be able to follow along on that journey with her rather than just have it be magic where we're just going to wave our wand and she's not xenophobic anymore. It's like, I would have rather seen that for myself and followed her on that journey and maybe seen some of the bumps of that journey. Like, I don't think it would have been smooth and I would have really liked to have seen that. And I also think it would have been good for the color. You know, they've made a really big deal about trying to, you know, show growth growth in the color pies, where they're trying to make red a bit more interesting and giving red this new mechanic of, like, exiling the top card, and you can look at it, and they're just experimenting with ways to you know, break out of the color pie, and I think this would have been a good opportunity for green to maybe give green a character it's never had before mm-hmm. that you wouldn't think would be green. So on Reddit this week, it was a very exciting week on Reddit, sadly. the first post that I discovered was a young lady had made a post asking for advice, and she indicated that she only had one LGS in her area. She just started playing Magic again, but that the person who owns it, the man who owns it, is inappropriate towards her. She said he'd been making sexual comments toward her and that his body language made her very uncomfortable. Apparently, he's been doing it to other girls as well, but everybody's afraid to say something, so, and it's the only store in the area, so nobody has really dealt with it yet. And she was looking for advice as to how to deal with this, and I was very disappointed with many of the responses. So we figured rather than, you know, kind of complain about that, we would, you know, give our advice and what we think we'd like to see happen. So what did you all think when you saw this? Like, what would you have told her to do?
Actually agreed wholeheartedly with what Allison, the community manager for Magic, suggested. I think the best course of action is, you know, if you see that there are other people in your community who are not happy with the way this person is treating women, like, obviously band together with those people, confront him, either yourself or with backup, and tell him that you're not happy with the way that you're being treated. And if that doesn't go over well, then definitely get Wizards involved. I know their retail support on the customer support team actually really cares about that. They want to make sure that Magic is as accessible and inclusive as possible. So getting them involved as, you know, a backup plan if confronting him yourself doesn't work should definitely be a priority. Because especially if you don't have another place to play Magic, your store should be a safe space for you, and you should feel welcome playing there.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I will just co-sign with what Hallie said, too. You know, I agree, you know, that what Allison said was completely, like, appropriate. I like how she gave, you know, her some suggestions about, you know, telling him some statements about how she felt about his behavior and, you know, try to, you know, gauge his response from there. And I understand that some people are saying, oh, well, you shouldn't, you know, confront him, or you should ask guys in the store what they think. And it's like, what do I care what some dude in the store thinks? You know, it's like, I don't need some guy to speak for me. It's like, if I feel comfortable enough to bring it to this person's attention, then I will. If there's other people in the store that are uncomfortable too, this is obviously an issue. I'm good at ignoring that kind of shit, though, because I've had store owners, like, try to flirt with me, and I'm just like, whoop, this goes over my head, and I just ignore them. But if it was, like, people invading my personal space too much and really making some sexual comments at me, I'd have to be like, listen, you need to, like, knock this shit off, or I'm not coming back here anymore. And, you know, maybe that's just not the place that you need to go. And it's unfortunate that it's the only store that's close to her. But I would rather play somewhere where I was respected than disrespected. I don't care how much I love Magic. I'm just not okay with that.
Yeah. And depending on, you know, the store dynamic, like, maybe there's a judge or somebody that you might feel more comfortable. Like, I understand that you don't really need the player base to be on your side, but if you don't want to confront him directly, finding somebody who is also in a position of authority, like a judge, could be a good alternative. But he might not know that what he's doing is inappropriate. I mean, people think they're joking all the time when other people aren't cool with it. We've talked about it before. And so maybe he does just need to hear it once, like, hey, could you not do that? And it can be something small for somebody to realize. And then if he doesn't stop, that's where I think, you know, contacting the retail support. Because their rep, if it's happening to more people in the store than just this one woman, their rep can just be like, hey, heard there's some stuff going on that shouldn't be going on. We have examples of X, Y, and Z. Could you not do those or else we're going to have an issue? And so that's kind of like a semi-anonymous way. I mean, if you've already talked to him, then he probably knows what's up. But if it's happening to more people, then I think it should be brought to Wizard's attention at some point if he persists after you talk to him.
Yeah, I was disappointed with the number of responses that basically said, well, Wizards isn't going to do anything. And just the, I felt like there was a lot of silencing happening, especially in what I consider to be safe spaces, which I was very disappointed by. The one time that I've had to contact Wizards regarding a store, it was handled very quickly. And mine was simply an issue of, you know, there was an 8-man win-a-box that I thought was kind of shady. Like, it had nothing to do with, like, you know, being inappropriate or my safety or anything. But they were on that, like, shit on Velcro. Like, it was very quick, and I was very happy with the turn. Now, so I, in my experience, they do react very quickly, and I would greatly recommend that. I'm with you, Chris. I also had a problem with the people who were like, you know, be professional, be nice, and I'm like, like, if you clearly, like, have bulldozed a boundary, you know, especially, I mean, I guess it depends on the severity of the comments, but if you've made, like, boldly sexual comments, you've obviously broken through my boundaries, so I don't feel obligated to really respect yours. So I wouldn't have a problem not being nice about it and being like, you know what, you need to back the fuck off, because this is not okay. And if I have to play Magic Online because you can't keep your mouth shut or you can't keep your hands to yourself, I'll do it. Like, I just would not put myself in that situation. I mean, I don't care how unhappy it makes me. Like, and I think it's also a really crummy position to be in. And I don't even know if the store owner is aware of this, but I would feel even worse if he knew that. Like, if he was in a situation where he was like, well, I know she's not going to go anywhere because I'm your only game store. Like, if that's a factor, like, that's even worse. Like, if he knows that they have no options because they can't go anywhere else, like, that's a whole other level of not okay. And I just, I don't know if that's his thing, but what if it is? And he's purposely, you know, he knows you're not going to say anything. He knows you're not going to go anywhere. Like, no. And I think that she should say something. And, you know, I realize she may not be as assertive as we are, but, you know, say something and realize that your happiness comes first. And if you have to play Magic Online, you know, it's sucky, but it's what you got to do. And I don't know.
You can also, I mean, she could, like, take some of the cooler people, the inclusive people from the store, and they could start, like, their own little hangout thing, you know, whether or not it doesn't have to be in store, but, like, somewhere else they could go and play Magic. And then you don't have to play online if you don't want to, and you still have people to play with, and you can have fun that way.
Yeah, we have a group of guys that every Tuesday they draft at a local ale house, and they do it every Tuesday. They get like a dozen people. They have a really good turnout, and they just do their own thing. I never see them at the local game store, but every Tuesday they'll get a beer and draft the latest set. And we also have a group of people that fires their own games off at the university in Wisconsin, UWM. They do something on Tuesday Night Modern as well. So that's a really good option as well, Katie.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you don't care about, like, getting Planeswalker points, you know, playing in sanctioned events, then that's totally a great alternative.
Sure. Sure. Another popular topic on Reddit this week, a young man named Sidney Blair, I believe is his name. He was banned for 2 years for being involved with a scandal known as Crackgate. If you're not familiar with this was a situation where he basically went around GP Richmond and proceeded to take pictures of men, I think it was mostly men, who happened to have their pants sliding down a little bit while they were playing, and some of their blood moons were showing, their full moons. That didn't land as well as I thought, but I tried. And took pictures of them and posed near them. These people didn't know it was happening. They certainly didn't consent to it. And then he proceeded to publish these pictures on the internet. This was everywhere. I mean, it was all over major news networks. It was all over Kotaku. It really gave the community and the game a bit of a bad name. And he was banned for his actions, and he recently was unbanned. And there's been some talk about what to do with him now. There's been some talk of banning him just for good. What do you guys think about this? Like, do you think that he's changed, or that he's ready to do good?
I don't think he's ready to do good at all.
No. I'm not sure. Yeah, the posts that he made seem to indicate that he isn't, which is a bit worrisome to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, whenever we talk about bannings, I always sort of go back to the, okay, what is the precedent for this? Like, there are rules for, you know, how long someone can be banned for various offenses, you know, having to do with cheating, things that you do when you're actually playing Magic. And it seems like that's pretty cut and dry. But when there's someone who has done something damaging to the community or something that Wizards feels is bad for their brand, it seems like there's always this sort of shuffle that we have to do, like, okay, how long do we ban this person? What is the proper punishment for this? And honestly, I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, 2 years seems like an adequate amount of time to me, but then again, we always come back to the, okay, has this person changed? Is that enough time for this person to repent for their actions? And I'm honestly not sure what it is.
Yeah, the thing I'm concerned with this topic is, like, last week we talked about, you know, bullying in the magic community, and one of the things was that was brought up in that article was witch hunts happening in the magic community. And I think what, you know, wizards and the players and everybody surrounding magic, what we're all trying to figure out is where to draw the line between people feeling not okay with what has happened and, you know, a dislike for somebody being what prohibits them from playing magic. And I think that's a really fine line to walk, and I don't think we've gotten anywhere near establishing how to walk it. And so, you know, some people are on the side of, well, let's keep him banned because I don't like what he did, and maybe it doesn't seem like he's, you know, ready. And then some people are like, let him play magic. He did his time. He hasn't done anything else, per se. So when he does something the next time, then he can get banned. And then there's always that initial, like, well, he did again, type thing. And I don't know exactly where I sit on this line. It feels like it just happened, like, 6 months ago.
Yeah.
When I read that it was 2 years, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Jeez. But I don't think that he is quite ready to come back, but I don't think it's fair to keep him banned, I guess. Mm. You know, we are all about, like, innocent until proven guilty or whatever. And he was proven guilty one time. Does that mean that he'll do it again, even if he seems like he won't? I'm not really sure. I'm just not sure what the repercussions of the next thing that he might do would be.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that he needs to be, like, Arma banned or anything, and forgive me if I come off ranty on this subject, but I got into a very heated argument with someone this afternoon about it. But,
speak on it, girl.
But I just, yeah, I think he's ready to come back, but he's ready to come back for the wrong reasons. He's just a troll. He admits that what he did was simply for the lulz. You know, there are plenty of people in this community that make it a bad thing. I mean, if we wanted to ban everybody just for being an asshole, holy shit, I'd never play Magic again because there probably wouldn't
there
be...
There goes me.
There wouldn't be enough people to play against. You know, it's... I, quite frankly, had forgotten about this because that was how irrelevant he was to my interests. And I'm like, oh yeah, that motherfucker. I remember him now. And, you know, he just seems to exude, like, I don't know, this certain level of arrogance and just doesn't seem like he's sorry for what he did because he just wanted to have a good laugh at other people's expense. And someone to me said this afternoon, well, if it had been me they took a picture of and it was, you know, my, you know, pants down in the back, that would have been my fault because I didn't pull them up. And I said, oh really, if that's how you feel about it, I'll take a picture of your butt crack when we get home and I'll post it on, you know, Twitter and be like, oh, can you believe this, you know, fat guy with his butt hanging out? Let's all just laugh at him. It's like that episode of The Simpsons where the tall guy gets out of the car and walks Nelson Muntz down the streets. And it's like everybody laugh at him because he's always the one laughing at everybody else. It's just like that. Like, the point is that if that was you, you probably would feel bad because you do have body issues that I know about. And the only reason you don't care is because it's not about you. But someone did something hurtful, you know, to other people. And maybe there were some people that weren't offended. They're like, haha, that's my butt. No big deal. But for some people, maybe that was a big deal to them. And I just think that he just wants to come back and maybe he'll be an asshole again. You know, it's hard to say. You know, his online presence seemed to tell me that he's probably not the kind of person I would ever want to know. But does that mean he shouldn't be allowed to play Magic? No. He's just a douche canoe that I'll do my best to avoid. And, you know, if he really wants to be a better person, that's on him. If he wants to act like we're like 15 years old forever, that's certainly his prerogative. But, you know, I think we need to focus more on people that are doing better for the community than people are doing worse. And unfortunately, in this community, it feels like people focus so much on the negative instead of on the positive. They'll remember, you know, this Crackgate guy for forever, but they won't remember, let's say, like, as an example, I'm not sure this ever happened, but, like, a magic team that, like, shaved their head for St. Baldrick's or something to show support for cancer patients. I mean, what the hell? You know, it's sad. I mean, but that's how the world kind of is in general about certain things, but you just gotta ignore them. I hate to bring up The Simpsons again, but it's like but it's like that episode of, what, Treehouse of Horrors, where all the advertisements are coming to life, and the advice is just don't look at them and they'll go away. And it's kind of like this guy. Just don't give him any power, and he'll shrink back into obscurity, you know, where he belongs.
Mm-hmm. I'm amazed by your, like, encyclopedic knowledge of The Simpsons. Like, you quote episodes and titles and scenes. Like, my goodness.
I know, it's kind of what my life is based on. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's amazing how much you can reference to, like, real life things that happen, and it's like, holy shit, this is so very relevant.
Hey, I get it. Yeah, I'm very disappointed. I don't think he should be banned. Like, just, I don't think he should be banned automatically. Like, come off the ban and then be banned again. But I said this on Twitter today. The appropriate response for somebody coming off of a ban is humility. Not getting up on a table like you're a frickin' house cat ready to pounce at the camera. Did you see that picture?
Yes.
It was, what was he doing? You're not Catwoman. What are you doing?
But he's a rapper.
He's like, he's something, honey. But he's looking at the camera and he's got this come at me kind of pose. Like, girl, like, this is not the picture of somebody who just came off of a ban. This is a picture of somebody who's trying to appease this legion of fuckboys that he's amassed. And I'm sorry, I'm not being nice about this. He knows now that he has people's attention. He knows that there are people out there who will hold him up as some sort of rebel, some sort of person to look up to. And that's his thing now. Like, that's his ticket to being known, to being relevant. And he doesn't have anything else, so this is all he has. And I kind of agree with you, Chris. If you take away that audience, then some of this show will go away. But now that he knows that he's got Reddit hanging on his every word, that there are other people hanging on his every word, he's not going to stop. And I don't think he should be banned just for existing, but I do think if he does this again, you're done. Like, I don't think there's a second chance in you. He's just not behaving the way that I would expect somebody to behave when they've had this taken away from them. I'm grateful for my position in this community. There have been so many times that somebody could have complained against me. I could have been banned for being a smartass. You know, I'm grateful and thankful that that hasn't happened and that I'm still able to be a part of this community. I don't think that's a right. I don't think playing Magic's a right. You know, this is a privilege that you have. It's a blessing that you have. And I'm grateful for that. And if I had lost that and it had been given back to me, I would just be a lot more appreciative than I think that he is. And he's just not looking at it the way that I do. Like, he's just kind of ungrateful.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about, not being banned by Wizards is one thing, but being banned by a TO is something else. And there had been an article about, signing a petition to present to TOs like Star City and, you know, Cascade or Channel Fireball or whoever to ask them to not have him play in their tournaments or be in the tournament area. What do you guys think about those kind of bans from a specific, by a specific TO?
I think it would be up to their discretion if they want to let him in.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I mean, if he did this at a specific event, like if there was a specific event where Crackgate happened and that TO felt that they didn't want to let him back in for fear of the same thing happening again, I think that would be warranted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also think there's different levels of being sort of, you know, muted or blocked too. And I certainly don't want to, I'm only going to open this door a little bit, and I promise I'm going to close it. But, you know, when the Zach Jesse thing was going on, you know, there were he did have sort of this embargo where he just wasn't put on feature matches. You know, he was still allowed to come to the GPs, but they didn't have him on camera, you know, things like that. I would be okay with something like that, like especially being Star City, because they were the ones who were hosting GP Richmond. I could see if they were like, all right, girl, we'll let you play, but are we going to put you on camera? Absolutely not. You know, are we going to, you know, put you on the header? Are we going to give you a deck tech? No way. But we'll allow you to be here and to play in things. Like, I think that's fine. I think, you know, not giving him any more of a platform is certainly a good thing. You know, it would be up to the TO, and I certainly respect them if they want to do that, but I wouldn't push for that unless I saw a little bit more. Yeah, than, you know, than what I'm seeing right now.
It would just add more fuel to the fire to be like, can you believe they're trying to infringe on me to go to these magic events? Mm-hmm. It's like, no one gives a shit about you that much. I'm so sorry. You know, I get you want to play magic, and that's all fine and well, but at least go and act like a decent human being. It's really not that hard.
Yeah. Our listener question this week, send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. My tongue got in the way there. This question is from Dennis from the Windmill Slam podcast. Fun fact, Dennis is Irish. So I'm very sad that he didn't read this to us because that would have been awesome. And he says, hey, ladies, as a fellow content creator, and especially with Aaron's experience in podcasting, what would you say is the most important aspect of building an audience in the magic community? Keep the great content coming.
When I read this email, I was reminded of something. I think Erin said that this was a piece of advice that Marshall Sutcliffe relayed to her, and that was be upfront about what you're doing or mm-hmm. what your message is. And I think when you're trying to cultivate an audience for some form of content, whether it's articles, podcasts, videos, so on and so forth, I think being upfront about, you know, who you are, what your message is, what you're going to present as early and as consistently as possible is probably the most important thing.
Yeah.
And along with that, knowing your target audience, like know what you want to talk about, but know what kind of people you want to listen to you so that, you know, you can either appeal to them or not appeal to another group of people. Like, if you're going to be making a hardcore Spike competitive podcast, you don't want to be like advertising or, you know, trying to like tell new players like, hey, come listen to this podcast. You'll really like it. Like they will not like it probably unless they want to get into being a Spike. And then, you know, it's a whole other can of worms. But I think knowing who you want your target audience to be is another good step in building that audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all those. I also think it's important to definitely be relatable, because when I, you know, listen to, you know, a podcast or I watch a movie or read a book, I like feeling like I can relate to the people involved. And listening to a podcast that's, you know, targeted, you know, at women in magic, I mean, anyone can pretty much listen to that if they want to know more about it, if they want to hear someone's opinion, you know, just as an example for ours. And we have, like, a myriad of different listeners. And I'm so thankful for that. We must have done something right, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, I certainly agree with what you all said. I think another thing is just to really engage your listeners. And what I mean by that is, you know, so if you get to a point where people are approaching you at events, really talk to them. You know, don't just, if somebody comes up to you and says, I love the show, don't just say, thanks, and then go to your draft. You know, if somebody ever comes up to me and says they love what I do, I say, that's awesome. What are you playing? Where are you from? How did you hear about the show? And whenever that happens, people always look really surprised. And I always find that so strange. Like, I don't know, like, what they expected me to say. But the fact that I'm adding more to the conversation, people are always like, who? Hey, mate, you're talking to me? And I'm like, yeah, you. Like, you know, what's your name? And they're like, oh, my name's Dave. And I'm like, hey, Dave, how are you? And, you know, I think that they just expect me to, you know, take the comment and blow them off or to go away and really engage them and try to find out who your listeners are. Social media, you know, if somebody says something to us and says, I really enjoyed the girlfriend bracket, give them a retweet. You know, let them know that you're interacting with them. You're appreciating that compliment. Going to events and actually meeting your listeners, you know, that's really awesome. Putting it out there, like, hey, I will be at this open. Come give me a hug. Come say hi to me. You know, not being aloof from your listeners has been really big for me, and just really interacting with them, you know, on a personal level. You know, I make it a habit to do really little things. Like when I thank somebody or I'm trying to get to know them, I say their name. So, like, if somebody says something really great about us and their name was Dave, I hate to keep using Dave, but it's what's coming to mind, I would say, thanks, Dave, instead of just thanks. Like, it's just finding ways to make interactions more personal. I feel like that's been a really big boon for me, and I always encourage other people to do that, too. So, anything else that we want to get off our chest before we wrap up the show this week?
I have one thing to share. Okay. This is pretty recent. I was asked to volunteer to teach Girl Scouts how to play Magic this weekend.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so this is an event, it looks like it's called the Geek Girl Scouts. It's sponsored by Geek Girl Con, which is a convention that's held here in Seattle every October, celebrating all things geek and all things female, I guess. And so there's sort of an offshoot of this where they're teaching Girl Scouts how to play Magic. It sounds like they've done it once before and it was successful. So my friend Kale, friend of the show, and I are going to be going to teach them this Saturday night. And it sounds like we're going to be spending several hours teaching Girl Scouts how to play Magic and then taking questions from them about Magic. So it sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
How old are they if they're in Girl Scouts?
I'm not sure. I'll report back on our next show about how this went, you know, how old they were, what it was like to teach them. I'm assuming pretty young, but I'm not sure.
Okay, you have to make me a promise on something, Hallie.
Okay.
Okay. If you find that you're teaching girls that are young enough to be brownies, mm-hmm. or if they let you into, like, the warehouse where they keep all of their gear, you have to promise that you're going to steal me an acorn hat.
An acorn hat?
I knew you were gonna say that. When I was a little girl, I wanted to be a brownie so bad. You know, the little girls with, like, the brown and the acorn hats?
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let me because, obviously, I wasn't technically a girl back then. Mm-hmm. But now that the Girl Scouts have become a lot more progressive, I want an acorn hat.
You've earned your acorn hat.
So if you can, like, you know, maybe put a sweater on Kirby and, like, stuff it in the sweater or, like, roll it up in your playmat tube, it would be much appreciated.
Okay.
And, like, if you could just become a jewel thief for me, that would be great.
Get, like, you know, an all black and, like, some suction cups on your hands and, like, scale the wall.
From this, like, children's organization.
Oh, man. Now I want to see Kirby with, like, a little black mask on his face. Just get him, Kirby. Get him.
He hates it when you put things on his head. Like, we're trying to find out, we're trying to figure out a Halloween costume for him this year because Halloween's just, like, 6 weeks away. And we're just, like, we have no idea what we're going to do. We're just, like, we're going to put a red collar on him and he's going to be Ayn from Cowboy Bebop.
Yes.
Because, like,
oh,
that's
God.
All we can get him to wear.
That's wonderful.
Halloween is 6 weeks away. Where is this year gone?
No, right?
Out the way.
Chris and I will be at SCG Milwaukee this weekend.
Cool.
So if you are listening, feel free to come say hello to us. Chris, are you going both days?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I have to work on Saturday, so I will be going to a modern side event on Saturday, and I'll be playing in the Legacy 5K on Sunday. So if you see us there, come say hello. We'd love to meet you. And then we're getting ready for the pre-release.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
So. All right. So if there's nothing else, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and how they can get a hold of you all?
Sure. So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. You can find me on twitch.tv/HalcanSan as well. You can send me an email at hcsmtg@gmail.com. And you can find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/MeMuggerMTG or on Twitter at MeMugger, that's MeAnMuggeR, or by email katie.neil14@gmail.com. I got a email from somebody this last week who was telling me about their blue-white control deck. That seems fun. It has, like, Sun Titan and a bunch of goodies in it, so I might throw that together at some point and test it out.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Sweet. And I'm Chris. My Twitter is TEHKRIZ. That's also my Tumblr. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ. That's yothkriz@gmail.com. And I also have a Snapchat and Cryptic Command spelled with K's.
Mm. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can also email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And you can find us every Friday morning at gatheringmagic.com. Thanks for listening and take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.
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 Bye.